powers combined, I am Captain Planet.
Captain Planet, he's a hero, gonna take pollution down to zero.
This is the second episode of Gaia's Gang. It's a podcast where we
rewatch an episode of Captain Planet every 2 weeks, reminisce about the cartoon and our childhoods a little bit, and re-raise all of the issues that are brought up by the cartoon.
That's right. And I'm Ariel Van Cleve, and you just heard from Andrew.
Andrew McCardell.
Uh-huh. And we also have
Emily Smith over here.
With some awesome energy today. I just want to point that out. So we want to first just do a quick recap of the first episode, not of our first episode, but rather of the first Captain Planet that was ever aired. And Andrew, you have I want you to take this away, to wow All us right. with this recap.
Yeah, so last time on Captain Planet, episode one, A Hero for Earth, we open on a planet in peril. Mother Earth, Gaia, is awakened from a century-long nap by the nefarious activities of Hoggish Greedley and his sidekick, who we called Beavis. They are marching a walking oil rig through a wildlife preserve, intent on stealing its oil. And when they drill into the Earth, they wake Gaia up. She checks her crystal iPad and discovers that the Earth is having all sorts of problems, starting with Hoggish Greedley and many others around the world. So she summons five teenagers to be her first planeteers. They are Kwame from Africa, Guy from Asia, Linka from the Soviet Union, Wheeler from North America, and Mati from South America. They are warped over to Gaia's home, Hope Island, given five rings representing the elements of Earth, fire, wind, water, and whatever the hell heart is. And with no training or time to practice whatsoever, they're sent off to stop Hoggish Greedley. They make it. They confront him. They combine their powers, summon Captain Planet. He wallops Hoggish Greedley into oblivion. And the Planeteers clean up the poor creatures in the wildlife preserve. And onward.
And onward. That was a pretty good recap. That was the first time that we were hearing it, too, so that was pretty good. Very professional. So we had received some questions, I understand, from some of the listeners. Emily, what questions were we hearing?
The best questions came from my cousin, Danielle, and she had two very burning questions, which was, one, where did they get their T-shirts? They all had matching T-shirts straight away.
Right, like as soon as they got to Hope Island, they like were ready to go. They were the Planeteers,
yes.
Full costume and everything.
Yeah.
Why? How?
There was probably a fitting room and like the warp beam.
That's true. Also, Gaia, I mean, it is Mother Earth. She may have just known their sizes and preemptively prepared for this.
That's a fair point. Yeah, that could be it. Okay, so the answer to that question is no one knows. We're just speculating.
It's all speculation now. The other great question was, where are their parents?
Mm-hmm.
No curfew. They're just flitting around the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that where could their parents be? Why aren't they concerned about their children?
Well, we don't know anything about this. And I think the likeliest conclusion,
you
know, until
orphans?
We could be that, or we could discover that maybe Gaia has like eco mind wiped them.
It could be.
That would be too dark.
Or this just could have been during an era, you know, a simpler time.
When nobody gave a shit about their kids?
Well, just, you know, wherever they are, as long as the it's daylight.
When I was watching Stranger Things, I kept thinking that. Like, why does no one care about where their children are? But then I remembered it's like the 80s and it's like,
fine.
Well, when the streetlights are on, come home.
Yes.
And
yes.
Even then it's like, I'm sure you're fine.
Right. So I think that's the answer, is a simpler time. It was a simpler time.
It's a simpler time. All right, fair enough. I think we covered that well.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have any more questions as you're listening to this or watching this, or you have any hot takes you'd like us to include, my goodness, please tell them to us.
Yeah,
we'll gladly have them in there.
I loved that, by the way, like seeing like people texting about it or listening to it and like had really like deep thoughts about the show. Oh, and something else I wanted to say that I don't think I was like as clear about as I wanted to be in the first episode, which is I'm finding watching the cartoon to be super enjoyable. Now, like this is peak TV time. You probably have to catch up on The Americans. And so if you don't have time to rewatch Captain Planet, we're doing it for you. That's what we're trying to achieve.
That's
but
right.
If you're at all inclined and you want 20 minutes of lighthearted silliness, I think this show's pretty awesome. I'm loving watching it. It's so cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
It's so positive. It's, I think it's great.
We know.
And we'll find out more as we discuss it. So the other, do you want to get right into the episode and talk about it? Or you want to, or are we?
Oh, I have one thing I need to address.
Oh, right. We want to clear up one other little point.
Yeah, not just clear up, but in our first episode, we were talking a lot about all of the incredible actors that were on the show. And first among them, I think, is Whoopi Goldberg, who voices Gaia. And I sort of, off the top of my head, tried to remember what she had been in, where her career at was in 1990 when this show started. Uh-huh. And I grotesquely undersold it. So just very quickly, all I could remember last week was that she was in the Sister Act movies, which came out a couple of years after Captain Planet started. And they did make her a giant, giant movie star. But
right.
In 1985, she was in The Color Purple and was nominated for an Academy Award.
Oh, dang.
Did not win it that year. In 1990, the same year that Captain Planet debuted, she was in Ghost and went on to win an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for that, as well as another Golden Globe, which she had also won the Golden Globe for The Color Purple. And so those are obviously fantastic and incredible achievements. But most grotesquely, for me personally, is I overlooked the fact that in addition to LeVar Burton, Whoopi Goldberg was also a character on Star Trek The Next Generation. Now, LeVar Burton was a regular and she was a recurring character. But
we didn't mention that?
We didn't mention that. And it's really on me and I'm very upset about it. So just very quickly, on The Next Generation, she played a character named Guinan. Not Gaia, Guinan.
So close, though.
Guinan was effectively the bartender on the Starship Enterprise in what they called 10 Forward. It was sort of the leisure deck where you'd hang out and have an iridescent cocktail and, you know, talk to the rest of the crew. But she was also this sort of wizened, almost Yoda-like figure, which you went on to discover in the movies. I think it was in Star Trek Generations that she's part of this sort of ancient race called the El-Orians or Listeners. And okay. So she's this sort of perfect, wise bartender consultant. I'm done. Just grossly undersold Whoopi Goldberg's career.
I wanted to see how long it was going to go.
All done.
Andrew has labeled this part of his outline as apologies. And on that note, I would like to apologize for basically falling asleep during the middle of last week's episode. But I brought coffee this week and I've asked Andrew to scale back a little bit on the superhero
Already failed,
history.
And I won't apologize for it.
Yeah, and I see we're already off the rails. At any rate, moving on. Episode 2, people.
I feel like there's enough crossover in the fandom of Star Trek and Captain Planet that it's potentially fine that that just happened. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. This episode is called Reign of Terror and includes yet another famous voice. Jeff Goldblum is the lead baddie. And what was his name? It was
Verminous Scum.
Verminous Scum. That's right. And he's like a rat looking guy, and all of his bad his little good crew also looks like a bunch of rats walking around. Yeah. It's very gross.
They were, quote, born and raised in toxic waste, which is what makes them so evil.
Ratty and evil. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
Now, they're gross. They are rat people. They're disgusting.
Yeah.
But this made them, I thought, vastly more interesting than Hoggish Greedley. So Hoggish Greedley, and Emily did a really good job dissecting this in the first episode, talking about his representation of this value of sort of unrestrained greed and the consequences that it causes. He's digging a wildlife refuge to steal the oil, and he doesn't give a damn about what's going to happen
right.
to the critters there. But with Verminous Scum and his rat pack, they are born and raised in toxic waste. And this is never said explicitly in this show, but one way that you could think about what they want to accomplish, which is to sort of blanket the world in acid rain, devastate nature, is that for beings that were raised in toxic waste, they really just want to create a world that looks like what they grew up knowing. And I think, I don't know, more complex, more interesting motivation than what we saw from Hoggish Greedley. I just kind of dug it.
That's very empathetic and perhaps akin to what we're doing here, trying to remake the current world of environmental issues and the image of our childhood environmental issues with Captain Planet. I don't know. Too far? Did we take the analogy too far?
No.
No, I think that was really good. As we open up on this episode, we've got Verminous Scum, played by Jeff Goldblum, who at the time, just to get this out of the way right now, he had been in The Fly, The Big Chill, and Earth Girls Are Easy by the time
And Jim Carrey was in that too, right? I saw that movie.
I just want to point out that Emily and Andrew both just threw themselves back in their chairs at the exact same time in the exact same way and made the exact same face by my saying Earth girls are easy.
I think for super different reasons, by the way. Emily, did you even know that that was a movie?
I've never heard of this movie.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
So he was, you know, a known person as well. And now he's becoming this voice as he's in Captain Planet now as Verminous Scum. And he is a real nasty guy, right?
Yeah. He's pretty much just upset that the, quote, stinking environmentalists closed down the coal plants because mm-hmm. they were polluting too much.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so he's got plans. He's got plans in an abandoned coal plant.
That's right. He does. And part of those plans, that's the rain-making chemical that they were dropping on the coal as it was burning so that then it would go into the atmosphere and create acid rain.
Yeah. And they drop almost too subtly. They drop a little educational nugget. And I guess we'll get into more of this later. But they say, Verminous himself, I think, says that it was high sulfur coal. So, and the release of sulfur dioxide is one of the things that can generate acid rain. So he right. actually says it almost a throwaway line. We're using high sulfur coal and we're using a rainmaking agent to create this concentrated cloud above the factory.
Little science fact, though. What is a rainmaking agent?
I know.
Think that bit is the cartoon part.
That's the cartoon mm-hmm. part. The other part is like science.
Yeah.
But then the other part is just cartoon. So as all of this is going on, we have the gang who's back at the training facility who are working out. All of them are working out. They're not using their powers get better with them. It's just physical fitness.
Yeah, more high intensity kind of workout right. situation. I think you can do the same kind of thing at like Orange Theory or... you know, this type of place these days.
Well, and I love that it was an obstacle course. Like, they created an obstacle course for themselves. Yeah, even just like, you know, like a CrossFit scenario
CrossFit.
Any of that. Mm-hmm. It was an obstacle course.
Yeah, it was like Tough Mudder Hope Island.
Exactly.
And I thought it was cool, though, that they weren't just practicing with their superpowers, because, like, the sort of physical fitness messaging like that targeted at kids is kind of a cool thing. Like, even though these teenagers have these supernatural powers, that it's also valuable for them to scamper around Hope Island and train up their physical fitness.
You got to have a fit body, a fit mind, and a fit spirit.
It's true. And you have to be good at you have to be good at gymnastics.
You have to be, apparently.
Yeah.
And Linka, classic Soviet.
USSR, crushing the gymnastics workout.
And those are like, what are they called? Like uneven
bars? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I actually heard display. So we had Gi on the monkey bars, crushing the monkey bars. Those yep. are harder than you probably remember. I was on some recently at a playground with a buddy of mine and his two daughters.
No. I'll never forget how hard those are.
Very, very hard.
Yeah.
And Gi's just crushing them, just like laughing her way through the monkey bars. Wheeler's climbing a rope, which as a child in PE class...
It's horrible.
Scared the hell out of me. So hard.
Yeah.
Also, I have a mild fear of heights, and it was kind of a good thing that I couldn't climb up high enough to freak myself out. But Linka crushing the uneven bars looks on the surface to be the most impressive thing. I actually think it's the least impressive because, as we all know, I think we can all agree that it's just a biological fact that anyone born in Russia or one of the former Soviet socialist republics is sort of preordained.
It's just like, this is what you're going to be doing.
Yeah,
and
that's
you know.
that's just science. Right. She can just do that.
That's just science. No, I think that's fair. Well, and then we have Mati, who is running through like the tires, but he's just a little guy, and it's like a problem for him. He can't quite make it through without almost tripping and falling, and he talks a lot about how he's so little. Mm-hmm. And that becomes a important piece of the pie as we go along with this episode, is that Mati is starting to feel like he's just too little to be effective, and he's scared about it.
Yes, and I loved this message. I mean, mm-hmm. I was short as a child, as I am as an adult, and I had this t-shirt, mm-hmm. this basketball t-shirt. It said, "Tall ain't all," and I wore that to basketball practice.
Nice.
Probably about the time of Captain Planet anyway, so I was into this message.
Right, you're like, yeah, I get that. Sometimes it's hard to run through tires when you're just so little, apparently. And then they have this, also, I just want to point out, are Gi and Kwame, are they like flirting hardcore?
Yeah, they are. Okay. So they are, and then Linka and Wheeler are a bit too.
Yes.
So yeah, so Gee's climbing the wall, and she's racing Kwame, and she's out ahead of him. And she's like, I'm going to beat you. Uh-huh. And Kwame says, no, you're not. And he shakes the earth and knocks her off the wall and then catches her.
Right.
And she gives him a little boop, poke on the nose.
And everyone giggles.
Mm-hmm. Very giggly. Oh, and it was kind of, we sort of picked up where we left off with Linka and Wheeler, because if you remember, Linka called Wheeler at the end of the last episode an imperialist dog.
Uh-huh.
And at the start of this episode, she's doing the uneven bars, and he is going to, you won't be able to pry the just dirtbag trophy from his cold, fiery hands. He says, looking good, Rootsky Tootsky.
Oh, God.
And she calls him a Yankee pest, and then off they go.
That's pretty good.
Mati's trying to climb up this wall that he has, but he can't quite get there. He starts to freak out. And then does Gaia show up at this point and start saying things like, you got to just fucking get over yourself, man. Like, stop being so sad and scared all the time. Or was it later?
No, not yet. First, he falls in the mud.
Oh, that's right.
And they make fun of him.
Everybody laughs.
They're laughing
runs.
At him. Oh, yeah, right. And he's feeling really bad. And then as he's feeling bad about himself,
right,
Gaia appears, right, declaring an eco emergency.
That's right. Eco emergency. But then as we are finding out, like, Mati's not feeling confident about this whole eco emergency thing. His energy's real bad. But everyone piles into the plane, and they start heading toward their eco emergency, which is Verminous Scum and his acid rain cloud creation.
That's true. Although at some point somebody says, to the crystal chamber, and we never saw them go to the crystal chamber. I don't know.
Oh, I think we did. They had a little briefing about Verminous Scum and the...
Oh, excuse me. I missed the layover in the crystal chamber.
I think I might have been taking notes during that time, and I wasn't like looking up, so it must have been a blip.
Andrew's watched the episode 7 times. I mean, we'll rely on him for plot points.
I said earlier, I really like the show.
Note by note. So then as they're learning about what the threat is and what they need to do to take care of it, you can still see that Mati is having a problem, and he's just turning a lot of stuff over in his head and thinking, oh my God, I'm not so sure if this is a good idea for me to go. I'm too small to help. There's just a lot of inner dialogue with him, which, wouldn't the others feel that in some way, or is that not possible?
Well, I thought that too, but they don't have the gift of heart, you know?
Only he can feel their shit, but he can't let them in on his inner thoughts?
That's what I'm thinking.
Hmm.
Yeah, it is. It's not clear, because they can definitely sense him, but it's not clear that they know anything about him or what he's thinking. They do get a little bit of a sense, because I think Linka tries to help him out of the mud,
right,
before they go to their briefing in the crystal chamber. And he, I think, refuses her help, and she sort of frowns. So they see something's not quite right.
Also, yeah. Wheeler keeps calling him a little guy, which I'm sure is very annoying to him.
Mm-hmm.
But classic Wheeler, just being a dick. Now I'm having a hard time remembering exactly what happens next. Andrew, what happens next?
So I think they arrive at the eco emergency,
uh-huh,
and... So they all disembark, except Mati says, I'm not getting off the plane.
Right.
The eco jet, whatever they call it. He says, I'm staying. And I think Wheeler tries to talk him into coming, and maybe calls him little buddy 3 or 4 or 7 times.
Yeah.
In a condescending way in the course of that, but is unable to convince him to leave the jet. And he says, okay, well, we'll go take care of it, and, you know, we'll be back.
Now, I want to point out, too, that Mati took his ring off.
Oh, he did.
Like, he took his ring off, and he put it down, like, on the little side of the plane, because I was like... That's intense.
Yeah.
Because like,
I'm divorcing you.
Right? Mm. It's like, I don't need this. And then just set it down.
Yeah.
Because he just was useless, apparently.
And as we learn as the episode goes along, what this does within the rules of the universe is, without all 5 of them together, no
right.
Captain Planet.
That's right. And that is a big problem when they get stuck in a chemical-filled warehouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
but we'll get to that.
No, go ahead.
And this happens pretty quickly after the 4 of them engage with Verminous Scum and his rat minions.
Yeah,
that they're basically cornered in an abandoned warehouse. It seems like the coal plant, when it closed down, didn't dispose of their chemicals properly.
Classic.
Which, yeah, classic environmental problem here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're trapped. So and they can't call the captain without you. I can't remember anyone's name, you guys. Someone make me a cheat sheet with like
you make your own
their name and what country they're from and their power.
Well, because the thing that I was also wanting to point out is that they had these acid guns. Like, it was spraying acid.
Well, toxic waste guns again.
It was a toxic waste or was it acid?
It was toxic waste.
Good God.
Because like, it was the second time we've seen a toxic waste
why
gun.
Why do they have so many toxic waste guns? Well, who's making them?
Again, though, with these characters, at least it kind of makes sense. If they were born and raised around toxic waste, this is something that will harm everyone who is out to get them, but not adversely affect them. It still baffles me entirely why Hoggish Greeley had a toxic waste cannon.
Well, yeah, that doesn't make any sense, but that's, but he's greedy. He just wanted to have everything. So maybe he like saw that these rat people had it and he was like, well, I want one of those. Those are pretty cool. But then here's the other thing. They're like, as they're wandering around and they're trying to like corner them and get them into this warehouse, then they close them up in there and they're locked inside. And then of course there's this chemical that's floating out of one of the barrels, which only is now doing that. Like, it wasn't doing that before.
Well, this was an interesting thing that came up, and this wasn't just an abandoned factory. This factory was seemingly shut down by some regulatory agency, like EPA or something like that.
Right.
And then, because Linka says, they get all trapped in this room, locked in this room that's filled with drums, big metal drums,
full
of this chemical.
Countless.
And Linka says, it was very irresponsible for the regulators not to dispose of these chemicals properly when they shut down the factory.
Interesting. I missed that point.
And the other consequence of this.
They're so up on the politics and environmental concerns of the day. Like, that's the thing. That's just like, that must have been part of like what's part of the ring. You just get all this information in your head too. Like, well, this shame. I know your name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what this also does, the other consequence that flows from this irresponsible non-disposal of the chemicals is that Wheeler thinks that he can just blow a hole in the side of the building to free them. And Linka says, no, dipshit, you do that, we're going to go up like a bomb went off.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Kwame's all set to start an earthquake, and Gee's like, no, other dipshit, you're going to spill that chemicals all over the planet. It'll be disgusting and wasteful and might hurt us. And then Gee and Linka are both like, we can't use our powers either for the same reasons.
Well, that's the thing that I wish that they would maybe practice their powers a little bit more, or at least discuss them so that there's an idea of where and when can we use these things. Because, like, on the day, there's, like, this isn't the first time that Wheeler has gone off half-cocked and been like, I'm just going to use my firepower and see what happens. But then they're like, whoa, dude, like, no, because you're either going to destroy everything around us or explode us. Like, don't. If they just had like a day to discuss possible scenarios, emergency situations where maybe they shouldn't be using wind, water, fire, or earth, like, just saying.
That's good. They would have easily come up with being surrounded by toxic waste barrels.
Right. But like, okay, so in this scenario, maybe we shouldn't be using any kind of mm-hmm. element that would make the barrels leak more or just set off a fucking bomb.
Yeah. Like,
I did like there was a small callback to the first episode as well. If you remember Hoggish Greedley, when he has them pinned on their little plateau as they confront him, and he's got his big oil rig and he's going to shoot oil at them.
Mm-hmm.
And Wheeler says, if you do that, I will just burn it out of the sky with my firepower. He does that in this episode to the toxic waste gun when it's shot at him.
Right.
And it goes up into the air and contributes to the acid rain cloud. Mm-hmm. And Verminous Scum says, thanks for your help, little buddy, or something like that.
That's good.
See, if you would just think about it, you wouldn't go and just blatantly be using all this power and ruining everything. But it is Wheeler, and he is a dipshit, as you say. So they're trapped in this warehouse. It's full of chemicals, and everything is like, there's one barrel in particular that is now just overwhelming them with fumes. The problem is now they're trapped, and no one knows that they're trapped, and they can't call Captain Planet because Mati is too busy sulking in the like plane without his ring on. But then all of a sudden he realizes that there's something wrong. Does he put his ring back on?
He must, because he it's either that or he just, and I can't remember which, it's either that or he's overwhelmed with guilt for not going in the first
right.
place.
Right. And then he's like, oh, well, if there's danger, I have to go check it out and I have to go see what's happening. So he's wandering around trying to find them, and he's like, I sense anxiety and fear or whatever, which was Like, okay.
Yeah.
And then still creepy. I don't like it still. Yeah.
That's he somehow realizes that they're trapped in this building, mm-hmm. and he comes to this building and he's trying to get more sense of what's going on. So he beams his heart ring at the door, mm-hmm. and then it flashes inside the building. The other four can see, but it's like his heart power is just seeping in at the cracks of the door, like on the top and the bottom. Mm-hmm. It's barely getting through. Which made me think of my internet at home, which somehow can't get through walls. And I have so many questions why walls would block internet from me having a good Wi-Fi signal. I'm just trying to stream Captain Planet and my internet's being blocked by the walls. Anyways, it seems like his heart power is having the same problem.
So that really spoke to you.
It like did. But it's like, why is it a wall impenetrable? He could hear from the plane, but it can't get through. But it got through enough.
Right.
That's the important part.
Right. It got through enough. Then they had to discuss, like, how do we get them out? And then the only way to get them out is to climb on top of this warehouse, smash the window open, drop a rope down into, right?
A hose.
A hose. So all of this then harkens back to, thank goodness we did all that physical exercise. Otherwise, True. We wouldn't have been able to use this in real time.
And Mati has to confront the challenge that he failed at the beginning of the episode.
That's right.
So he fell on his ass in the mud puddle.
He had to have courage. And he was able to overcome all of his fears and save his friends.
Gaia beams in.
Yeah, like last minute, she's like, hey, dude.
As he's on the wall and struggling with whether he's going to be able to make it up, Gaia beams in with her sort of sky-encompassing Gaia face. And looks down at him as though she's like kneeling on the roof, but just, you know, she's as big as the sky staring down at him and gives him the confidence to, you know, overcome his fears and become a true planeteer.
Right. And then he does. And then they're able to get out. But then like, okay, listen, we can't handle all this stuff ourselves because this is too much. We need Captain Planet to get involved in this shit.
Yeah. So a couple just quick things. There is a line. Mati lowers a fire hose mm-hmm. down to the others so they can climb up and out. And Wheeler says, last one up's a hoser, and then climbs up first, which, terrible joke.
I don't know what that even means.
But Ariel, as you pointed out before we started the episode, he's repping all of North America.
That's
now,
right.
He's from Brooklyn, but, you know, a little shout out to the Great White North, I think, our Canadian friends, with the hoser zing.
So that's the thing Canadians say?
Totally.
Something else I liked about the fact that when they summon Captain Planet in this episode, Captain Planet is almost an afterthought in this episode. Because the whole episode is about Mati overcoming his nervousness and his inadequacies as he perceives them and triumphing. He does. And then they summon Captain Planet. And there's a couple things that are funny that happen with Captain Planet and Verminous Scum, but there's really no conflict between Captain Planet and Verminous Scum. Captain Planet kicks his ass and it's over pretty quickly. So Captain Planet's kind of an afterthought. This was all about the Planeteers banding together. Mm-hmm. They were prevented from being quitters and instantly summoning Captain Planet in this episode by Mati's separation from them.
Right.
Which I thought was kind of cool.
Well, and I also, the interaction between Captain Planet and Verminous Scum, there was a lot of like one-liners that they were giving each other like back and forth, which
including a Rolling Stones reference.
Yeah, there was a lot of weird stuff that was happening. And I was like, why is this?
My biggest question after the captain was summoned is he, you know, comes up and he says, let's make like the wind and blow.
Right.
Something like this.
Yeah.
Isn't that someone else's power?
Well, I mean, it's his power too, because it's all of their powers combined.
I guess. It just seems
And again,
like...
we got to make you flashcards. It's Linka's power. She is the wind wielder.
Right. Linka, wind. Anyways, but I guess Captain Planet does add a little bit of science, a little bit of basic science. Oh, that got Andrew just right.
It's true. It's some basic science. He gets a mineral deposit from the Earth and then blasts it to pieces to prevent, like, to get rid of the acid rain cloud because it was destroying the forest, like, and it was happening very quickly. Which I found interesting. Doesn't happen that fast, right? Acid rain? Does it just destroy suddenly and like everything's gone?
Yeah.
But it was like a super-powered one?
Right. This is like a caricature version of, okay. of Acid Rain.
Although as a child, I did think acid rain would burn my skin off. But right. it turns out that's not the case.
Right. It's but when you watch things like Captain Planet, it makes you think that maybe my skin will burn off if exactly. I'm in a forest.
It's terrifying. So this also makes sense why kids would be so motivated to prevent acid rain, yeah, right?
Like,
it appears
shit.
As if it will instantly destroy your forest. That said, it's still bad. It's bad stuff.
Yes. Speaking of destroying the forest, as the acid rain cloud starts to waste away at a nearby forest, we get another shot of wildlife fleeing yep. the disaster, including a white bunny.
Yep, that's right.
Is there going to be a white bunny in every episode?
Ooh. I mean,
it's like a Where's Waldo situation.
It's like an Easter egg for all of us.
All right.
That's the hope.
I hope
everybody
so.
Keep looking out for
the
white
bunny is an Easter egg.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even mean to do that. Gross. That's worse. So he smashes this mineral deposit. He's able to
sodium bicarbonate,
and he's able to fix the problem with the acid rain because he's neutralized it. So then, like, Verminous Scum is like, oh, shit, dude. Like, I worked really hard to make that, and now it's gone. And then what? And then what happens with
and
this episode?
And then Captain ties up a pipe again. I don't know why, but he
That's
does.
Right, because he was, like, blasting him, trying
to... The toxic waste cannon.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, because Verminous Scum like said, let's turn this superhero into a super zero.
Super zero. See? There's yep. a lot of these kind of lines. Mm-hmm. Mostly yeah. those lines.
So he ties it up. And that basically ties a bow on the episode.
Yeah, oh, I just also wanted to mention. So, yeah, when Captain Planet is pushing away
or blowing
away.
Wait, I have more things to say about the episode.
Last thing. When Captain Planet is blowing away after he's made, like, the wind and blown the cloud,
mm-hmm.
Verminous Scum says, hey, you, get off of my cloud,
yep.
which is the Rolling Stones reference, which I kind of like that because that's for the parents in the room.
I don't
That's
know the reference,
parents.
Andrew. What's
it's
the reference?
It's a lyric from a Rolling Stones song.
All right.
There was also, let me see if I wrote it down. I wrote down Salt Bomb, like as big as I could, apparently. but no, I didn't write it down. But there was like just a couple of one-liners back and forth that I just really enjoyed. There was one where like Verminous Scum was like, no, that's what I call entertainment. And then he was like trying to shoot up Captain Planet. And then Captain Planet had like three or four different one-liners. And then it was just a lot of cleverness that I didn't think that there was like it was inappropriate timing.
Well, and speaking of inappropriate, earlier in the episode when Verminous Scum is looking through his scope at Linka, who mm-hmm. is about to become trapped in the building, he says, oh, you're looking out of sight in my sights, which Ugh. Ew.
Yeah, I couldn't decide if it was clearly used to make the Verminous Scum seem grosser, but also, man, is this contributing to an acceptability of locker room talk in everyday culture? I don't know.
I think it very well could be.
I had questions.
Yeah, it was gross and unnecessary. And I take back all the empathetic things I said about Verminous Scum and his rat pack at the beginning of the episode.
Also, I want to point out too, just real quickly, that as they're going around trying to find more people that they could like... get into the warehouse if there's like other folks who are trespassing on the closed coal plant, they're like, oh, I can't wait to find more people. And then they saw a mouse or a rat or something that was like sitting on a barrel, and they tried to shoot it, and then they said, sorry, cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why even do that in the first place? Because they're really bad. Like, that made me hate them even more. Because I was like, really, dude? Seriously? Like, you can't just leave well enough alone. Yeah. You also have to kill something that is,
your
like...
Your cousin. Your rat cousin.
Gratuitous toxic waste-fueled violence.
That's pretty good. So, as far as the acid rain is concerned... And
oh,
that
wait,
being...
but the episode ends with Mati triumphing over the wall on Hope Island. I don't want to forget that.
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He does.
Yeah.
Also, to be fair, the wall, the space between those a little, like, they look much wider than they did initially.
It changed. It changed. This is a continuity problem.
So, or they're just like, they made a whole new one and they're just fucking with him.
Yeah.
Like, the whole episode was based on them just fucking with him to see if he could handle it. Turns out he couldn't and he lost his shit.
I think the only reason I noticed that is in the first part of the episode when the others are having great success climbing the wall, I was looking at it and it looks like it's thick, pretty wide, almost bamboo-like.
Mm-hmm.
Boards, I suppose, piled on top of each other, and there's no gap in between any of them. So they're climbing up, and you're thinking, yeah, it's a cartoon, whatever, but seriously, where are their handholds? Where are they grabbing this thing?
Right, and like normally there would be like a rope or something that you could use to help climb yourself up,
none
but instead it was just a flat wall. Yeah.
But you're right, at the end, they were separated enough such that the individual stalks operated as handholds.
It's like, Mati, of course you could climb that. You could have climbed that in the first place. But they were fucking with him.
And the last thing I'll say about their training sequences is that it really gave me, like, in addition to the rope climbing, specifically PTSD to the physical fitness, presidential physical fitness challenges we all experienced as kids.
That's why I was asking earlier who was the president at the time, because wasn't that a Clinton thing more than it was anything else?
I think that's right. I was trying to remember that, too. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if that predated Clinton, because this would have been the H.W. Bush years in 1990, but I just know that my hamstrings hurt just thinking about the sit and reach. I was the kid who sat and reached and could not touch the board, even not even come close.
It's such a weird, what a weird fitness test. Like, did you guys get certificates too for that?
Yeah, because there were like two levels, right? Mm-hmm. I think you got a participation trophy if you just did it.
Right.
And then there was like the merit level if you were like pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the presidential level, which was... one kid in the school.
That was me.
Is that true?
Yes.
And Emily is the person that I was super jealous of in PE class.
So flexible, able to just sit and reach and then were there sprints? Were there sprints involved?
You had to run.
Like a shuttle run?
You had to like, you had to hang off a bar?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
God, it's so many weird, such weird stuff.
Yeah, I bet I can do none of those things now. I could still sit and reach. That I could do.
I have to have you prove it later. Yeah.
After the pod.
So this week's threat was the acid rain, and that was a really big concern prior to the initial passage of the Clean Air Act in 1970. So, I mean... we haven't really experienced a lot of acid rain as of late because of the fact that this was passed.
You get a little bit of a primer in the episode, right? You know, the mm-hmm. burning coal, burning fossil fuels is going to generate acid rain. Verminous comes able to do it very quickly because he has magical cartoon things to help him along. And this was a big issue that I think really emerged in the 1960s and persisted into the 70s. And you see passage of like the Clean Air Act and environmental mm-hmm. legislation and regulation. But what happens with acid rain is when sulfur dioxide, SO2, or nitrogen oxides go into the air, that can lend some acidity to the rain. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, too. But when you think of acid rain, I feel like the caricature of it that we all imagined as kids was, as Emily said, your skin sloughing off because it's so concentrated. In reality, I think, you know, if water isn't a perfect pH of 7, do I have that right, Emily?
Yes.
If it's not a perfectly balanced pH of 7, it might be slightly acidic. Anyway, but it's not going to be a problem until it drops to a pH of probably 4 or even down to 3, which is going to be like a citric acid, like a lemon juice kind of thing, or soda.
But the problem it caused, even slightly at slightly lower, are things like making a river or stream more acidic, which can be bad mm-hmm. for fish. So I think that's another mm-hmm. hyperbolic example you think of with acid rain, is like a bunch of floating dead fish in a river.
Mm-hmm.
This can be caused by changing the pH of the water or the oxygen concentration as well.
Yeah, and the destruction of the forest, you know, it was caricaturized in the show, but it wasn't too far off either. I mean, what can happen is it can get into the soil, affect, you know, trees' ability to take up water. It can ruin vegetation, affect wildlife and forests, in addition to sort of aquatic environments. This is a good Captain Planet friendly messaging point. So at the end of the episode, we get the Planeteer alert. Is that what they call it? Where it's Linka doing a voiceover saying, you know, call you. She says, write a letter to your congressperson.
That's right. Inclusive.
about this. Yeah. And gives you sort of a call to action. And, you know, with this, you could tell, you know, kids could go home. And I think you talked about this in the last episode, Ariel, like turn off the lights, use less electricity, mm-hmm. carpool more, use public transit. These kinds of things mm-hmm. will all lead to fewer emissions of fossil fuels.
Yeah.
Well, and in the 90s, too, there was like amendments that were added to the Clean Air Act. And that's why this was again brought into the forefront of like, okay, well, it's still kind of a problem and it needs to be, we need to adjust our approach mm-hmm. to make sure that everything is on the up and up with regulations and that we're making sure that we're protecting the environment appropriately.
Yeah. So this is actually, this is a really cool, sort of, I don't know if it's fortuitous or something, but the original Clean Air Act passes in 1970. President Nixon signs it. All these regulations implement it. It creates this big sort of hybrid federal-state scheme where there's federal oversight of state programs to reduce emissions of pollutants, certain pollutants that are deemed to endanger the public health and welfare. And then over the couple of decades after that, it gets amended a few times, and there's huge amendments in 1990. In fact, 2 months to the day after the first episode of Captain Planet aired, on November 15th, 1990, the Clean Air Act amendments are signed by President George H.W. Bush. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they specifically address, in addition to what was already handled by the original Clean Air Act, is acid rain. The reduction of acid rain was an explicit priority of those 1990 amendments. And they created this sort of cap and trade program, national program, whereby, let's say, I'm a good guy polluter, emitter of pollutants, and I'm under the thresholds that are set as appropriate for sulfur dioxide and for nitrogen oxides. But Emily down the street is a polluter who's a bad guy polluter. I could sort of sell my allowance, the degree to which I am underneath the permissible thresholds. I have an economic incentive to be beneath them because then I can market that. And we have vastly cut the effects of acid rain mm-hmm. in this country, but they are still a problem in other places.
That's true. So while the U.S. has effectively innovated for old school coal plants, you can put in these technologies to reduce your emissions, or newer technologies that allow a gaseous burning of coal are much better at reducing the amount of emissions in particulate. But the big rising problem actually is in China and India, which are now producing the majority of energy from coal plants. Whereas the U.S., we've had this dramatic reduction, about a 50% reduction in how much energy is produced from coal. So right now, it's about 30% of U.S. Energy is from coal,
huh.
Whereas it's rising in India and China. And right. So you actually see a fair, if you just Google acid rain, you'll get news stories from China. There's, stories about old statues of Buddha kind of crumbling under acid rain, or buildings turning yellow or having erosion problems due to acid rain. So that's kind of where you're seeing this still being a problem. So maybe a re-release of Captain Planet in China? Question mark.
Let's get out ahead of this thing. And I think on that note, we could wrap up this second episode of Gaia's Gang, which is the, I'm going to have you say it again, Andrew. What are we doing with this podcast?
We are rewatching, reminiscing, and re-raising the issues.
Very good. So tune in again for our next episode in about a couple weeks. And thanks for listening.
Bye.